بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا بالقاسم المصطفى محمد. على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. The title for today's discussion or meeting is Islamic Society between Dogma, Reaction and Realism. I believe we can claim to be fortunate enough to be living in an era or a century as we approach the end of it, or a new millennium, which we haven't seen anything of it yet, but mentally we're still living a little bit in the past before the millennium and the 2000 year. It has been a century where different personalities, individuals, groups have come to think about the Muslim predicament in particular, and from their experience have prescribed certain things and advise certain things to get the Muslim community out of the present crisis. As I indicated last week, rather than look at this, topics that we have each Sunday as a purely singular person speaking, I would like more interactive communication. This is why I intend to change the style. And rather than be in a form of a lecture, turn it into a form of a workshop where you will contribute as much as you can and I will try to contribute as much as I can. And through the collaboration we will end up concluding something. Now if, based on that idea, if I were to ask you, what do you, or how do you define the present Muslim status in the world? As much as possible, use singular phrases rather than sentences. So I'll leave the floor open and anyone can start. How you define and you explain the present Muslim status or situation in the world, in contemporary world? Just one phrase.
Disunite.
Anything else?
Lack of leadership.
Confused. The system. Not practicing teaching of Quran. Prophetism. Sectarianism.
Widespread.
I think it's united.
No, I don't in a political sense.
In a geographical sense.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't hear you.
Nominal. Disparate needs to copy the West. Disparate needs to copy the West.
Lack of identity.
Oh, lack of identity, yes.
Illiteracy and uneducation.
Lack of education.
Yeah. That's very important. Anything else? What I want, rather than on a practical sense, what I would like, a phrase that would explain the present status. We come back to why probably abuse or misuse of the resources comes under it. But on a practical, on a general definition that explains the present status of Muslim.
Dishonest.
Anything else?
Lack of confidence, esteem.
Lack of identity practically comes under it, but confidence. Confused again.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Westernized?
I suppose secularism. Well, that comes to lack of identity as well. Secular mentality, Western mentality, lack of identity, they all close to each other. Because Westernized, they become Westernized when they either they don't know anything about their Islamic identity or they don't have any Islamic identity.
Also because they don't practice.
Well, it's because due to lack of practice probably comes over here. Hey, what's hypocrisy, sir? That goes under the reason for, one of the reasons that has led to the present state. We want to define the present state system. Well, we have, if as far as education has two applications or two kind of division. Lack of education due to the fact that there are not qualified scholars around, or lack of education could be due to the society not prepared to be educated. And if you're talking about scholars being around to provide leadership, it goes under leadership.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Injustice.
Injustice. In what sense?
Yeah. Well, injustice done to the Muslims.
As a practical sense, or as a dominant force or a dominant condition?
Both.
As a dominant position comes under oppressed. As a practical sense, it goes with the comments that brothers made. It could be the cause for the present status, rather than a kind of a phrase that describes the present status. I think you will agree it's a gloomy picture.
Lack of power in the world.
Lack of power. They are marginalized, dismissed, not recognized in most societies. This, what you have presented, is a gloomy picture. Nobody can doubt and say that after this kind of definition or these kind of phrases, the Islamic society or the Islamic ummah or the Islamic community is living in an ideal kind of condition. Now if I ask you to, in addition to phrases that you have used to describe the present status of Muslims or Muslim community, to give me one phrase that in your opinion, or one thing that in your opinion could take them out of the present status. A prescription. Now you feel it's gloomy. If there is no practice, it's confused, lack of leadership, disunited, etc., etc. But one point that you would think if it was to be put into practice, there is hope of coming out of this gloomy and bleak picture. Sister. education.
Even in the next few weeks.
Okay.
Lack of faith.
We are talking about, well, faith, yes. Lack of faith was on this side.
Leadership.
Leadership.
Follow the advice of honest people.
Follow advice.
What about generosity? Mutual generosity. Or self-sacrifice. Capacity of self-sacrifice.
But it has to be defined properly, system.
I want
to say probably confidence,
otherwise
that's practical. Well, I mean that probably comes under the definition of faith.
Yeah.
Confidence in God.
That's again.
The Muslim should be more broad-minded, not narrow-minded.
Broad-minded. Anything else?
Not just following, having faith in the Quran, but also studying it.
Clear understanding of. Clear understanding of the religion.
Confronting injustice.
Open to dialogue.
What do you mean?
It's not every to present their ideas are not going to rush immediately to an armed confrontation.
Broad-minded. Anything else? Discipline.
Value in time.
If you value time, that's your advice, that the whole society and Muslim community will change.
I suppose
if they appreciate or if they understand that the time that they lose on useless activities are not going to be replaced and it is a golden opportunity missed, I suppose that's possible. Anything else? You see, what you have identified as reasons that if you were to put into practice the cause or the source or the root of the malaise disappears, this is in total, the whole is called the spirit of Islam. What you have identified, I have identified a society that calls itself Muslim and has certain problems. But in practice, it has lost its touch with Islam. Because that's the reality when you say these are the things that you expect to be put into practice, and once they are put into practice, it means that they are not at the moment practiced. So what we have a society that lacks education. It lacks unity. It lacks faith. It doesn't understand and has no confidence in Islam. There is no leadership. Follow advice of other people. Even if people give advice, they do not follow. There is no self-sacrifice. Broad-minded, etc., etc. These are factors that you claim, if you were to put into to be practiced, the problem that the Muslim society is facing with discipline. Correct? This is the gist of what you have suggested. What does it tell us about the society itself? What chance do you have of actually putting these into practice?
Next to none.
Next to none. That's optimism. Anything else?
It's fine.
It takes time. Anything else?
We want to do it.
We want to do it. Yes. Ever since the beginning of this century, there were individuals that looked at this bleak picture in front of you. Remember, at the moment you have the advantage of being spread around the world a little bit. And by default, using the freedom that exists, however relative, that exists in the West, to be able to practice certain things. But the beginning of the century, around the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, the picture that was presented at the time, or the scenario that was presented at the time, you have the colonial powers taking control of the majority of the geographical boundaries of Islam, apart from minor ones that escaped what we call physical colonial powers. Majority of them were under colony. And hence, to look at the history of revivalism, you have no alternative but to divide it into two distinct sections. The way it was reacted to and people prescribed for the disease that Muslim community or Muslim societies were facing at the time, before the Second World War or even before late 50s and after. Generally speaking, if you were to look at the gist or the general views existed at the time, the West as such started nibbling and chipping at the edges of the geographical Islamic boundary for nearly 300 or 400 years. But like most of the time that we have dealt with a leadership that was not, in a sense, in tune with society, or everything that was happening, they were blind and in somehow narrow-minded and narrow vision. They only could see the area around their own probably cities. The classical example is the Iranian monarchs during the Mughal attack. He was informed that the Mughals had taken Khorasan. He didn't do anything. They had taken northern Iran. He didn't do anything. They are far away from Isfahan where he lives. And they came and circled Isfahan. Still, I've got my own palace. Once they got to the gate of the palace, he started taking istikhara whether he should do something or not. By then it was too late, they were inside. Unfortunately, this kind of narrow-minded, that we somehow, because everything that we have, faith as such, has been defined based on personal benefits. Everything that we do, as far as religious activities or other things within a religion, if we consider it based on profit and loss account. We become accountants. Unity, does it benefit us? If it does, we work for it. If it doesn't, we forget about it. Everything in religion becomes elastic. If it benefits, we pull it. If it doesn't, we let go. So it's not new that the West or the Western powers in general were attacking or began attacking the Islamic, what we call, boundaries. They started from far away, from borders of China, northern Russia, southern parts of Africa, and gradually closed in. It was loss of Egypt in 1798 by Napoleon, when he captured Egypt, that suddenly people came to their senses and realized that a catastrophe was taking place around them. And for years they had done nothing at all. So the benchmark is 1798, when Egypt was taken by Napoleon. That suddenly these living dinosaurs that were in charge of this, the Islamic Ummah, suddenly they realized that not only they are not far away from them, it's one of the centers of Islamic civilization was taken away and colonized by France and by French army. Then it was a can of worms. Open it and then everybody's kind of a beehive. You poke it and the bees spread around. We had scholars running left, right and center trying to analyze the situation. What went wrong? They realized that something drastic had changed. But what was it? That was the as they say, $6 million question or $64,000 question. They could not identify one particular point that could be called the cause to this problem. That if they were to change the situation, things would be okay. As normally, we are reaction rather than proactive, we are reactive rather than proactive, they started analyzing after the catastrophe and came up with different groups. The first group were those who were typically had no faith in Islam and anything to do with Islam. They called themselves the modernists. The modernist movement. And this again changes from before what we call political independence and after political independence. They all take different shapes. Before political independence, modernist movements primarily asked or insisted on copying the West in social attitude, norms, etiquettes, etc., and reinterpretation of Islam. That Islam had to be reinterpreted to make it flexible enough to accommodate the Western point of view, whether from philosophical points, social points, civilization, art, you name it. This was their idea. And there are individuals within this group that are classical examples. We see them in Iran particularly. People like Malcolm Khan and a few others, that they not only insisted and encouraged people that to forget about faith, Islam in total, they deliberately tried to misrepresent Islam within the community and ask for total assimilation with the West. The phrase that Malcolm used, we have to become westernized from head to toe. That's the only alternative we have out of the present problem that we face. The next group are interesting ones. This is diametrically opposite. These groups defined the problem. They said that anything apart from going back to the spirit of Quran and the Hadith, according to the way that the past, the Salaf, has interpreted these Ahadith and the Holy Quran, everything else must be left, forgotten. That Salaf passed.
past, and which comes to be known to be as the Salafis. The name, yes. But the idea was past and those who were before us.
Predecessors.
That the only way out of the present crisis that we have, that the society as such is facing with it, is to go back to Quran, the Hadith, but not any interpretation of the Hadith and the Quran. It has to go back, and even then, primarily Hanbali and Ibn Taymiyyah. Even as far as the return to the back is concerned, and to the generation before, they looked at it as a narrow definition. It's only this that can give the answer to the problem. And they became known as the Salafis. Personalities, individuals, characters like Muhammad Abdul Wahhab and few others in Arabia and other places in North Africa and even Northwest India, they went for this type of mentality. And in the West, these people are called reactionaries. If you look at a few books here, I brought them with me. Islam, this is by Akbar Ahmad and Hastings Donovan. It's called Islam, Globalization and Postmodernity. Islam, Muslims and the Modern State. The case studies, edited by Hussein Muttalib. This is another one, The Failure of Political Islam, and Fred Hannaday's Islam and the Myth of Confrontation. If you look at these four books, they look at these people, which later on were called as Salafis, are reactionaries. They define them as reactionaries. Why? Because what they believed in, that we should forget about everything. All the way of life. I mean, there is a classical definition that they give. They say, to go back to the purity of early Islamic history on the basis of the teaching of the Quran and the Hadith, asserting that the latter transformation and development in the Islamic history were the causes for the weakness of the Muslims. They should go back to the teaching of the Quran and the Prophet, as defined by the ancestors, or Salaf, in order to strengthen Islam. Muslims should put aside all philosophical, artistic development of the Islamic civilization, the easy mode of life, and the big cities and luxuries and heedlessness which accompany this, and go and live. As-salamu alaykum. And live in a simple life the way their ancestors 1,400 years ago, 1,300 years ago, he used to live. They primarily rejected everything within the Islam, all the development within the Islamic civilization were rejected, and not only rejected, because they considered it to be the cause of the problem. This is number two. Number three were Muslim scholars. Particularly this had, within the Shia group, had a kind of followers quite a lot. The Mahdi's group. Unfortunately, still even up to today, we have a number of people who still advocate this kind of mentality. Within the Shia more than anything else. Although the Sunni community have had a couple of these movements, for example, in Sudan, the Mahdi movement in Sudan, as well as North Africa, but primarily within, and even West Africa, primarily within the Sufi orders. What these people said, they said that we have a number of hadith in our books, that the sign of the end of time is when injustice takes over justice and engulfs the world. And this is a sign. The proclamation in the past that injustice takes over, and hence we don't need to do anything about it.
The less we do, the more injustice takes over, the quicker Al-Mahdi will come and the end of the world. That's it. So, this kind of movement resulted in the appearance of individuals like Muhammad Ali Bab in Iran and a few other individuals around, like Al-Mahdi in Sudan and a few other places. However, these people differ profoundly from others. While other groups were trying to find solution to the problems, these people thought that the problem is useful. The more we have it, the better it is, because that would quicken the whole process. After a few individuals that played a role for a short period of time, this practically disappeared. Although, after the political independence, we have a kind of what we call academic mentality still remaining, but although not coming out as a blatant movement. After the independence, majority of, and within these groups, there were individuals like Jamaat al-Islamiyya, Ahwan Muslimin, then you have Maududi in Pakistan, and in India and Pakistan, and a few other scholars around, that they worked hard as much as possible, at least for achieving political independence, rather than creating a movement. After the political independence, it was hoped by people that with political independence comes more economic independence, more religious independence, more cultural independence, and this political independence becomes the kind of basis that other independence that has been lacking in the past will be brought forward, and people will gradually move towards Islam. However, political independence did not result in the economic independence. On the contrary, political independence, even the relative degree of political independence, because the colonial powers, when they left, during the period that they were in charge, they made sure that the elite group that they would select or they would facilitate for them to come to power mentally will be the same as the political masters who were living in the, somewhere else. So this is why I say a relative degree of political independence. These people, not only when they left, most of these countries that were colonized by them, economically was left practically useless. A classical example in this case will be Mozambique. Mozambique, when the Portuguese were in power, had an infrastructure. When they left, they even took the engines from the trains out. They took the railways. They took the major changes, that, I mean, platforms that switches the rail from one side to another. Lorries that they had that they could not ship, they took the engine out. They took the tires out and practically left the country with nothing, absolutely nothing at all. And in countries that were not done so blatantly, in the debt and the lack of resources that existed in that country created in more economic dependence on the West. You will only need to go and look at United Nations reports about Africa. Since their independence, they have been much more worse shape of economically than their dependence on the West. Because at that time, they had the local resources and they had some kind of management. Now, due to mismanagement, where the sister said, mismanagement of corrupt leaders, loan were given to them, even local resources now being used to pay for these debts. Nothing left for the community whatsoever. So not only political independence did not create economic independence, it resulted in cultural dependency. the more they try to copy the Western economics as well as technical development, technical development became, or technical means became the way by which the West influenced the culture of society. You bring in TVs, radios, and other communications, and the West uses the same techniques to penetrate. Again, a classical example is in Iran at the moment. They are complaining about the West deliberately channeling, organizing and establishing corrupt channels specifically to broadcast to Iran alone. Something that I have spoken to a number of well-positioned individuals, and they said that it's so bad that we do not think even the West allows these kind of films to be shown at 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock in their own houses in the West, but freely broadcasted to special channels towards Iran and a few of the West Islamic countries. Now, this kind of reaction, this kind of position created again a revolt. There were those who went again, we have a revival of modernist movement. But this time, modernist movement primarily, that before used to work like Kemal Atatürk and somebody else, that they were working for political independence, now went for secularization. Modernist movement, but moved towards secular mentality. And majority, probably 98, 97% of the Muslim leadership, present Muslim leadership, falls under this group. They are secular in mind, they pay lip service to Islam, but in essence, because they work based on national identity and this geographical boundary that was created after the Second World War. And that contradicts unity that you want to achieve. This is why last night in the lecture that I said, looking for unity through political establishment is not possible. If we sit here and we hope that the governments would do something to establish unity between Muslims, it's not going to happen. Why? Because it's inherently a contradiction. Governments are there to serve their own purpose, which is nationalistic ideas and identity. And nationalistic identity contradicts Islamic identity and unity between Muslims. It's us that we have to do it, not the politicians and the political establishment. 97% of the moderns, which were brought up primarily and educated by the elites as well as the colonial powers before, fall under this modernist movement that becomes secularly minded. You name it, you start from 6 months ago I was in the state and I was invited to go to a church and lecture. I wasn't told that these people are going to be ex-CIA officers and ministers, somehow workers within Pentagon or some peculiar institutions. I was told there are a group of people who have come to the church to learn about Iraq. And if I could go there and deliver a lecture to them. As soon as I walked in, I realized that the atmosphere is not an audience wanting to listen to Iraq. Because the way they were dressed told me that they are not the mortals that I was looking for. So to find out their true nature, I went around and I said, could everyone introduce himself? My name is Jack Dawson, ex-CIA officer. I said, oh Lord, the second one, I was working in the foreign ministry. The third one, I was in charge of one of these schools. And a debate developed. One of them, an old Egyptian fellow who has lived in the state for 40, 50 years, he said, let me give you an advice. I said, please do. So the problem with Muslim communities in the world is that they emphasize too much on Islam. It's because they have an Islamic leadership and Islamic state. This is why they are backward. By luck, there was a map on the wall. I said, could I ask my learned friend to identify around here which one of them have actually got an Islamic state? We start from Morocco and we go towards the east. You call Moroccan government an Islamic state? No. Algerian ones an Islamic state? No. Egyptian ones? God forbid. Jordan? No. Saudi Arabia? Oh Lord, no. We move up and down. Turkey? There's only one country that claims to have an Islamic state. As a matter of fact, two countries in the Middle East that claim to have religious, based on religious identity. Israel and Iran. Apart from these two, nobody else, they all claim nationalistic and secular mentality. He said, I used to think that these people had Islamic state. I said, well, you need to go and read your history a little bit better. It appeared that he had left Egypt 50 years ago. Now this modernist movement, after the Second World War, turned into secular mentality, and they were put in charge of the majority of Muslim countries. This Salafi movement redefined itself a little bit, but still working. Primarily in Saudi Arabia, a few of them there is a movement, still part of the movement in Lebanon, and in Syria, as well as in Egypt, and few of these, and the Gulf State. There are minor Salafi movements. In the West, they have, in England, there is a base. In France and Germany they have, and recently they have started a kind of movement in North America and Canada. It is attractive for those who have been mesmerized by the material life of the West to be told that you have to go to the kind of pure life of the Holy Prophet and reject everything. It is irrational, yes, because inherently Islam, when the civilization, what led to the civilization and the golden age of development in the Islamic state or Islamic area was not the life of 1,400 years ago. It was the fact that Islam emphasized on logical and rational development and gave freedom to people within the framework of belief to do what they like. What these people want to do, they want to take you back. They want to take you back to the old way of life that existed. Yeah, we never deny that it did exist, but at that time, technological development and scientific development that later on within three centuries appeared in the Islamic Ummah did not exist. It was not because it existed and they rejected it. But these people consider any technological development, any scientific development, any civilization to be the cause of the problem. And unfortunately, it doesn't work. Obviously, after this came the Mahdi movement again. Mahdiism, it didn't catch as such after the political development. What we have, however, as the fourth criteria is the intellectual awareness. And the only hope that we have is through this. Primarily, intellectual awareness or movement says that there is no conflict between the good aspects of civilization, technological, scientific, and everything else with Islam. the malaise, the problem that we are facing is for lack of application. It's not due to Islam itself. What they see, the fault to lie outside Islam, and the cure to lie inside Islam. I had a lecture some time ago, about 2 years ago, at Concordia University in Montreal, regarding Islam's view on women. There were a group of Canadian feminists around in the audience, but the discussion became very heated. And at the end, they had to admit that the problem that women are facing in the Islamic world is for lack of application of Islamic law, or misinterpretation of it. And when I asked them, well, in that case, are they prepared to help me out to implement Islamic law in Canada, they somehow shied away from it. The intellectual awareness that exists, I mean, this is a fourth movement, that inherently there is no law problem with Islam. As a matter of fact, Islam was the cause for social development, scientific development, and technological development, that became the root for the Western development, or the essence of the Western development. I remember the discussion I had with Marhum Atari in Tehran about this story. He said, the Christians developed when they left Christianity. Why? Because the spirit of Christianity was restricted and dogmatic. We Muslims deteriorated as soon as we left Islam. Why? Because we became the dogmatic. Now, within this dogma lies a number of issues. Closed-mindedness. Because we try to justify our own position, we have no clear understanding of our religion. We lack confrontation, and as a matter of fact, there was a self-sacrifice is gone. We are not prepared. As long as there is, I mean, Friday prayer starts. We all know the importance of Friday prayer, but we are not prepared to participate in Friday prayer. Why? Because that 1 hour we can make extra bucks out of it. Why should we go to Friday prayer? This self-sacrifice, putting Allah before everything else, and looking at Islam as a way of life rather than as an ideology. This misinterpretation or closed, narrow definition of Islam has been the cause of the problem. That Islam is not just an ideology, it's a way of life. And you can't shortcut certain things. I was talking to a friend, he said, well, Allah would forgive. And if I don't do the prayer in the afternoon, I'll do it all in the evening. Looking for excuses. And this is the only hope that I think out of the present crisis. Their views and how we can achieve it, inshallah, I will leave it till next time when we meet again. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I strongly recommend, brothers and sisters, to read a number of books. If you want to look at the Western view on Islamic revivalism and the way they label them, these four. Islam and the Myth of Confrontation, the Failure of Political Islam, and the other two that I've mentioned earlier. This book, I found it to be an interesting book, Islam in Europe. It gives a case study of different societies in different countries. Don't take everything that you see here as the Western expression says gospel truth, if there is something in the gospel is truth. It gives you that history. Islam and Modernity, God bless his soul, John Cooper. This is another book that helps. There are two other books, Pioneers of Islamic Revival by Adiyarat Namah. It's a case study of views of a number of scholars about the problems that are faced by the society. We have Jamaluddin Afghani, Muhammad Abda, Shahid Saleh, Marhum Imam, Hassan Banna, Dr. Shariati, and a few others. It gives you a kind of synopsis. And obviously, Marhum Karim Sadiqi's point of view in pursuit of the power of Islam, it gives you a good background but the movement in, at least in the United Kingdom. The further book that I have recently come across, Islam in a World of Nation-State by James Piscatori. Again, this, there are good articles in it. And obviously, if you have access to this book, I have recommended it quite often, The Young Muslim's Guide to the Modern World by Sheikh Hussein Naz. It is helpful. And there are good articles in Islam and European Thought by Albert Haruni. They are here if you want to have a look at them. Now I leave the floor open for further questions.